honor for us to have Beth Tebbe be our chapel speaker. Most of you know that she is doing special projects with the Collegiate Ministries Department. But beyond that, she served as missions treasurer of the two countries when Jim Tebbe was president of InterServe, and that's Pakistan and Bangladesh. And also, she's been a missionary for 34 years in Pakistan, Bangladesh, Jordan, Cyprus, the U.S., and soon in Pakistan again. If you'd like to know her thoughts on postmodernism, she has written an article at the Evangelical Missions Quarterly 11 years ago. So there are other things about Beth Tebbe that you don't know, aside from joining the famous people who have How Firm a Foundation as her favorite. So come up, and I'll pray for you then. May the words of Beth and the corresponding meditations of our hearts as we listen be acceptable to you. In the name of Jesus, amen. Thank you, Lisa.
Okay. Well, generally, when building a house, laying a good foundation, I think, is the most important thing that a builder does. And we're in the process of selling one house and buying another, and we're counting a lot on our inspector, at least when it comes to buying a house. She will study the foundations to make sure that the house has integrity, that what looks good on the first floor is matched by security below ground. Transitions are a time when the world seems like it's rocking. There's been an earthquake in what's felt secure. It's kind of vertigo and a lot of confusion. We live by categories, and these seem shaken. I'm really aware that I'm not the only one in this building that's going through a time of transition. There are job changes for a lot of us. There are babies coming. There are family members in a new life stage or passing on. There are new possibilities. And for each of us, there's a question about our foundations. So I'm sharing today a bit about my own story as just one person pondering, what does it mean to have the Lord as my sure foundation? I was born into a Christian family in northern Indiana. My father was a seminary professor. Now, he was a true academic. He was an Old Testament and Hebrew scholar with a specialty in biblical archaeology. And I remember as a little girl, his face just lighting up with some kind of find about Hittites or something in ancient Chaldean. My folks had planned on being missionaries, first to China, and then after China closed, to Japan. And they were supposed to be part of a new seminary that was being started up in Tokyo. But my mother had very poor health with kidney disease, and she almost died when my sister was born, and they weren't able to go. So they turned their energies into heavily supporting mission efforts financially, and my dad was on a couple of mission boards, and we attended lots of missions conferences. Now, to do a wee bit of name dropping, Christy Wilson was the man who helped to organize the first Urbana Conference in 1946, had led my dad to the Lord as an undergraduate in 1943. So he was our hero, and I grew up praying for Afghanistan when I could barely say the word. As a little girl, every Saturday night, the ritual in our family was to go into my dad's study, where he had a great big globe. And he would try to demonstrate how the sun was coming up over the countries on the Pacific, and we'd pray for their church services which were beginning just as we were going to bed. We'd pray for services in Japan and Korea and Formosa, which is now called Taiwan. It was all very old school missions, very paternalistic. But still there was a real heart to see that God was working in these countries, and a real desire to see the church planted firmly there. Now here I'm going to put in kind of a parenthesis, because it's a story that sort of spans my lifetime. It's part of my personal foundations, and it helped shape me a lot when I was growing up. It's something that brought me a lot of confusion, particularly as a child, but even into adulthood. When I was 6 months old, I had encephalitis. And the doctors told my parents to put me into a home for brain-damaged children, that I'd never be normal. One doctor was trying to be helpful, and of course what he saw as the best solution, and he just said, she'll just be a vegetable. So I thank the Lord that my parents refused this advice, which was actually quite common in the 1950s, I've found out, and they took me home to care for me there. And then something happened around 11 months, and my mom describes it as I woke up. I started to develop normally and finally walked when I was 15 months old. And I was always told that my life belonged to the Lord and that I was a miracle baby. But the backside of this is that I was left with partial complex seizures. And these were mostly at night, and but the fear of them was a controlling thought, even in the daytime. And there's also a very deep sense of shame attached to them. I always thought it was a mark of what a bad girl I was. A lot of my relationship with the Lord as a tiny girl centered around praying and begging for these things to go away and repenting of what I thought were causes and naughty things I'd done, and then looking for some kind of childish answers. And it never occurred to me as a kid that other people go through, I mean, some other people go through this kind of thing, and that the cause was physical. I thought it was all inside of kind of who I was. I wanted to hide it from anyone else, and I thought I'd be spanked if anyone ever found out. And most of all, I didn't want to tell my parents. So one thing I've seen in my life as we've moved around the world is that the Lord uses different contexts to repair different fault lines in the foundations of my life, and to heal and restore dangerous cracks. And Madison and the NSC has been the place where the Lord has really healed both the shame and the fear and even the physical cause of these seizures. You guys were a tremendous support to us in 2003 when the seizures crossed over to coming into the daytime. And then 2004, I had a surgery on the scar from the encephalitis. And I haven't had any seizures since then. That in its own way was a major transition in my life. It came at the time of multiple other transitions going on here in the office. We were planning for the change of venue for Urbana, and it felt like the whole world was tilting. And I didn't know who I was anymore. But the invitation from the Lord was to find Him as my sure foundation, and to give up shame as a controlling factor in relating even to the Lord. So these years in Madison have been wonderful years. And growing in this way, and plus of countless others. So I'll go back in time to chronology. By the time I met Jim, shortly before Urbana 1970, support for missions was just an assumption in my life. And I think my personal vision of what missions entailed was going to be Bible translation work. I'd probably invest my whole adult life with one people group who weren't yet able to read the Bible in their own language. I expected to live in fairly difficult surroundings, but I thought I would live and die in one country in a fairly limited situation. My father had worked on the New American Standard version, translating that in the 1960s. So this is the height of a worthwhile contribution that a missionary could make to bring the Bible to people who didn't yet have it. So Jim's background in the Muslim world was fairly new to me. I did have the ideal of Christy Wilson and his service in Afghanistan, but Jim's growing up stories of Pakistan sounded really intriguing. Very different, but like something that where I could see God had been working. So after seminary, we took baby Daniel and we moved to Pakistan in 1977. And I quickly found out that we were just as capable of making mistakes as any of those missionaries that we'd kind of judged in those old biographies. The transitions of the 1970s and 80s are kind of a blur, actually. At one point, we moved kids and everything we had from one country to another 5 times in 7 years. It's all kind of wrapped up in choices that were necessary given the U.S. foreign policy decisions throughout the world of Islam during that time. Every time the U.S. did something unpopular in the Muslim world, we felt it, and then there were huge problems getting visas, among other issues. That was the personal implication. So we went from Pakistan, where our second son David had been born, to Dhaka, Bangladesh in 1980. This is just after the Grand Mosque in Mecca was seized by militants, and it was blamed on the CIA, and I don't know, but I really don't think we had anything to do with that one. So in Bangladesh, I was suddenly a pastor's wife as my primary role for the next 3 years. It's a very international congregation of about 200 people from 35 countries, and a very rich time of growing with them. And then Jim did an intense year where he worked on a master's in Islamic studies in Princeton, New Jersey. And we still weren't able to get one of those elusive visas to go back to Pakistan. So we went to Jordan to study Arabic. I was pregnant with our third child, Andrew, and while we were in Jordan, the idea was suggested to apply to the government of Pakistan on compassionate grounds to let us come and have the baby there. Because Jim had been born there, and somehow there was some kind of logic in that. Well, the idea worked. So I arrived in Pakistan 7.5 months pregnant, just past the deadline I'd given the Lord. I said, okay, Lord, if the visa comes by Christmas, I'll go. Well, it came on the 26th, literally. So we left Jordan immediately, and we went on to Pakistan. Now, we got to our Islamabad, our first couple of weeks there, and go to the International Church on Sunday, and everybody looked at me, took one look at me, and said, when are you leaving? Basically, the answer was, well, we just got here. So the assumption was that I would need to go to Bangkok, or at least to a better hospital than anything that was available locally. And I'll have to confess, this was a fairly rough transition. Jim's folks were still there, and they were a big help, but you could sort of call it the mother of all transitions. And it makes anything that's ahead of us, I think, look like a picnic. But Andrew was born safely. And then I finished out that school year homeschooling the older boys. Then in the spring of 1986, we were asked to move to Cyprus and for Jim to be part of the mission administration team there. Now that's like the equivalent in the InterServe mission of the NSC. I was just barely pregnant with Esther, but we agreed it was the right move. So then we stayed in Cyprus for 16 years. And that was a time of Jim traveled a lot, and he brought the whole world back to our little island and our kids. Cyprus was home until Jim was asked to come here to be the director of Urbana at the end of 2001. Now, this all sounds blithe and easy, and you make a lot. Jim's the better storyteller. He got a lot of funny stories about all this. But I can assure you that I don't really do transitions gracefully. And it doesn't get any easier when you've done lots of them or when you get older. I can give seminars on them. I'm going to be going to Philadelphia in 2 weeks, and I'll talk to a group of candidates that are going out with InterServe for the first time and do a workshop with them. I know all the dynamics, and I can even write a rough version of the entry posture diagram on a napkin. But it doesn't make it any easier to go through this myself. Would I do it all again? Yeah, if I could do it with Jim. Has it been rewarding and a life rich with experiences? I couldn't have asked for anything more. Do I believe God has guided us every step of this way? Absolutely. And do I believe that in our own little way, God has used the breadth of all these experiences to further his kingdom? Yeah, I really do. But do these transitions feel natural and like something I can do well and easily? Absolutely not. Do I know that God is leading us away from all of you guys whom I love to Pakistan to play a part in renewing a particular university and hopefully influencing the educational culture of that country? Yes. But does it feel like a huge uprooting? Also, yes. The word that keeps coming to me in all this is the word foundations. Last August, we told you, most of you guys, that we are going to Pakistan for our vacation. And that was true. But it was also a time from part of the trip to look over this job possibility at FC College. We had confided in our parents, and because we have certain responsibilities for them and felt that this is something that they should know. My dear father sent me this verse from Isaiah 33:6. He will be the sure foundation for your times. a rich store of salvation and wisdom and knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the key to this treasure. Now, the word foundation sounds like the antithesis to transitions. A much more appropriate metaphor for this time of life would be some kind of journey image, like a road or climb or something more clever. The old Welsh hymn, "Guide me, O thou great Jehovah," uses the story of Israel's journey from Egypt to Canaan, and it asks the Lord to be strength and shield. It's a time where one is very conscious of the need for God as guide. I've been realizing as I'm going through the familiar dynamics of yet another transition that what I need is to find my stability and what is real, and what is sure, and what is true. If my foundations are in my house, or in the NSC, or in the InterVarsity community, then my world is rocked. Now, I happen to really like our meetings in InterVarsity. I love our culture of processing everything, and our endless discussions. I like the challenges we give to each other to live out our faith. And I like the fact that we hold fast to the faith once delivered to the saints, but then we keep finding new ways of expressing how to do that. I deeply appreciate that we continue to thank God for the work that Jesus did on the cross, and then keep delving into that to see all of the dimensions. In terms of feeling home, this is probably where I feel most at home of any place that we've lived. But it's not my home. My home is in the Lord. Now, Moses was a man whose whole life was an identity struggle. And he wrote in Psalm 90, verse 1, "Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the world and the earth, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God." Looking at another man in the Old Testament, what made it possible for Abraham to move and respond to God? Now, Jim and I went through the fabulous ruins of a city called Mohenjo-Daro in the southern Sin Desert of Pakistan in 1974. Mohenjo-Daro was supposed to have been one of the trading cities with Ur that Abraham had left. And we were young then, and we had a really wonderful day. We were climbing and a bit of chasing each other up over the walls, and it was a great city and a great time. Abraham's response to God wasn't some family camping vacation trip. This was transition with a capital T. The cities in Canaan that he went to in 2000 BC were less than a square mile, and he'd left a city of 24,000 people, roughly. Whatever amenities he'd had in Ur, he certainly didn't have now. The indication was that Abraham longed for stability. He desperately wanted an heir. He wanted rootedness. He wanted settledness. And yet God called him to a life of constant responsiveness to the calling that God had given him and simply going where God led him. How could Abraham do this? Not to mention Sarah. Because they had foundations. To switch the metaphor a bit, their roots went down deep into God. Before you can go to a new place, there's an uprooting. This is the phase that we're in right now, and I don't like it. Saying goodbyes and sorting and downsizing. And on a deeper level, it seems to negate what God has done in this period of life. "Lord, I thought these gifts were from you." Yes, but they gave them to you to hold lightly and to realize that your foundations are in me. It's a time of grief and letting go. But how can I let go when I met God here? And there's the unspoken fear, at least sometimes for me. Am I letting go of the God I've met? Will he leave me too? But the best thing about this is that when the good things that we've equated with God are stripped away, we're alone in the desert with him. In this desert time is part of the transition. Doug Stewart, in the Hearing from God in Times of Decision retreat, encouraged us to look at Jesus' experience in the desert in Matthew 4 as his major transition into ministry. Now, there are experts in transition along with everything else, and one person described it from the Snoopy cartoon This is Linus when his blanket is in the dryer and he doesn't have anything to hold on to. It's a time of anxiety and confusion, and when motivation and efficiency seem dry and difficult. I think one of the many lessons that we learn in this desert transition time is that fundamentally God's grace is best evident in our weakness. He may have called us, and he will use our gifts and experiences, but this is all about him. Without him, our foundations are weak, and they won't survive the transitions ahead of us. Paul assures us in 2 Timothy 2:19, "Nevertheless, God's solid foundation stands firm, sealed with this inscription, 'The Lord knows those who are his.'" Now notice in this place, he doesn't say, "You know that you're the Lord's," but that when our faith feels shaken, God holds on to us. And that word of the hymns that we just sang, "That soul, though all hell should endeavor to shake, I'll never, no never, no never forsake." Now I'm guessing that most of us in this next year will go through a transition of some kind. We're all getting older. If you're not, the person sitting next to you is. As I face this transition, God knows that I'm his. Are there places where some other good thing is part of my foundation? And if so, transition is earthquake time, and it will collapse. A city that has foundations, a city planned by a heavenly architect, a city lovingly designed by a master builder who gave his own life to be the foundation. The last part of that section of Hebrews 11 says, "Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them." A city with foundations in a time of transition. Can you pray? Lord, you know my heart and my struggles. You know our longings for certainty and our dislike of confusion. Lord, I pray that you will enter into these transition points of all of our lives, and you will reveal to yourself to us as rock, as foundation, and that even as hell tries to take advantage of the situation and shake us, we will simply be aware that you never forsake, you never collapse, and you're firm and sure. Lord, I pray that you will be with every person here, my sisters and brothers who are facing a transition of any kind. May they know you through the fire. May they know you through the river and through the confusion. And I pray that this time of transition will be sanctified to them, will be set apart in their lives as a time when each of us comes to know you as our deep bedrock foundation. And Lord, that we will rest on you, and that in your name we will go, because you are with us, firm and sure. In Jesus' precious name, amen. Thank you.
rests on thee.